Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Sam from the Thursday Night Sober Women's Group in Quakertown.
Hi everybody, my name is Sam, I'm an alcoholic. When I came into this program, I was told that I needed three things in order to succeed. One of them is a sobriety date. That gives me my accountability. My sobriety date is July 18th of 2015. I was told that I also need a sponsor to give me guidance, and I have one. She knows that she's my sponsor, and I call her, probably not as much as I should. And I have a home group, and I just recently changed home groups, but I joined this women's group, and it's just amazing, and that gives me a safe place, it's a safe place to go when I need one. I'm really honored to be asked to speak here tonight. I really respect this meeting. I feel like I always leave here in a way better space than I come. I am a bit nervous, just because that every time I hear a really great speaker, so it's really an honor to, you know, to be asked to share my experience with everyone tonight. The difference between what I was like when I was drinking and now can be seen through my problems today. I don't have as many. My problems before were, where can I get money to get what I needed? How am I going to keep the electric on? I'm taking cold showers because I can't afford oil. My parents are mad at me. My friends don't want to hang out with me. And my problems today are just, you know, I don't really have money. We just bought a house. I'm still trying to adjust to those kind of expenses, but the problems today are in no way even comparable to what I used to face on a daily basis. And that makes me really grateful. I don't know what makes me an alcoholic. My story isn't filled with all these DUIs and children that I've lost because of drinking, crashing cars, none of that. But I do know that when I pick up a drink, I have no clue what's going to happen. I have no clue how my night's going to end. So I guess I'll start from the beginning. I was, born and raised in Souderton, Pennsylvania, which is about 20 minutes south of here. I lived in the same house for the first 23 years of my life. Two loving parents who are still totally head over heels for each other to this day, which I'm very blessed. And three older brothers. They were all from a previous marriage of my dad's. The two oldest I don't have a relationship with today. I did a little bit when I was younger, but not anymore. And then a brother who was 9 years older than me. And we grew up in the same house, so he was my big brother. And he got in a lot of trouble, I remember growing up. You know, he was always getting brought home by the cops, and like he was 9 years older than me, so he was, you know, I was little and he was, you know, in middle school or whatever. So, I mean, there was a pretty big age gap. But he still taught me all the things that big brothers do, how to tie your shoes, ride a bike, things like that. And we were pretty close. From a young age, I was nuts. I was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder when I was 10. I had these weird triggers and rituals, and for me, I just really hated who I was inside. Never felt like I fit in. I know that's such a cliche here. You know, not really feeling like you belong, but I really didn't. I had a lot of friends, but I just never felt, I always felt like, I heard someone say this, like, everyone else was given the handbook for life, and, like, I missed that day at school. And, you know, when I heard that, I was like, oh, my God, I can really relate to that. Like, I just felt like everybody was just one, like, page ahead of me in the life book. I would make up, like, I mean, I had three brothers, but I didn't have any sisters. I would, like, make up stories how I had these two sisters. And, I mean, I was just nuts. I faked an eye exam in second grade so I could get glasses because somebody in my class, like, had glasses, and I thought they were cool. So I screwed my eyes up for life. Just really stupid. I just hated who I was. I really did. I hated being Sam. I remember going, the first time I was ever in a bar, my mom used to play softball for a bar league. And she's from like Delaware County. So we would drive there. We would drive to Delaware County like a couple times a week. With her two, she played softball with her two sisters and they each had a son. So they're my cousins and they were, one was a year older, one was my age. So we're all really close to this day. So they would play softball and sometimes like I would beg my mom, like, please can we go back to the bar? Go back to the bar. Like, I just thought it was so cool. Like everyone, that's what everyone did like after the softball game. So I remember walking in there and, that was when like you could smoke in every bar. So it was just smoke filled and the music was blaring and it smelled like cigarettes and like stale beer. And I just like loved it. I could not wait until I was like old enough to actually go for myself. And, you know, we would sit like at a table and drink soda and like eat french fries. And my mom and my aunts were really close with the owners. So, you know, we would stay there for a while. And that was like the first time I was like, wow, like I couldn't wait to grow up. I had obviously three older brothers. I was the youngest cousin on one side. So I was surrounded by a lot of older people. I didn't feel like I had to grow up fast, but I was always the youngest, and I always tried to act cooler than I really felt inside. As I got older, I watched my brother get into a lot more trouble. When I was 13, he had overdosed on heroin in our house. It was Super Bowl Sunday. And that was like the first time that I was exposed to like anything like that. My dad got sober before I was born. I think he just had like 33 years, just celebrated 33 years. So, there was always a big book laying around, always a grapevine, like in the bathroom or whatever. And, I remember after that, my parents sat me down and they're like, listen, your brother's a drug addict, you know, your dad, you know, is an alcoholic. And I knew my dad was an AA. I knew he didn't drink, but that was like to the extent. I didn't know about the steps. I didn't know about the God thing, you know, I didn't know about any of that. And, my parents said, you know, I know you're going to want to experiment, but just be careful, when you do. So I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to smoke. I'm never going to drink. I'm never going to do drugs. Like, I'm going to learn his lessons for him. Like, you know, I thought that I would really, like, learn from his mistakes. And, so a couple years later, I get to high school and I start dating, like, the, you know, wide receiver for the football team. And the reason I bring him up is because he was a huge part of my, addiction and alcoholism. My story, you know, disclaimer, my story does include a lot of drugs, but I will definitely keep it to the bottle, in my story. But, so we start dating and he introduces me to a lot of things, a lot of different things, a lot of, you know, drinking and drugs and stuff like that. And, you know, which I later kind of blamed him for, but I knew that eventually I would have found those things on my own. But his family was big drinkers. Like I said, my father's in sobriety. There was never any beer, alcohol, anything in my house. I didn't really have any big drinkers or anything in my family. So I never really had those like family parties that were like crazy and insane. But his family was. And, the first time I drank, was at, you know, one of these family parties, and it was kind of like the kids can drink as long as, you know, you don't make a fool out of yourself or get the cops called on you. So, I wound up like throwing up and, you know, passing out, and my mom had to come pick me up, and she was upset. And, I just remember like, I actually felt like a part of something, like, because everybody was drinking. It was just that camaraderie that, like, I really, like, needed in my life. when I was younger, I had this fear of vomit. So whenever I felt sick, it would like send me into a panic attack because I didn't want to throw up. So, for that to happen to me, like the first time I drank, you'd think that would like really deter me, but, it really didn't. So high school goes on like that kind of weekend warrior type thing. Because I was dating this person, you know, he was really popular. So by association, so was I. So we always like knew where, whose parents were going away that weekend, you know, who could get us alcohol, who could get us, you know, booze or whatever else we needed. And high school was fun. I definitely didn't see any sort of problem with it. I mean, my mom was like up all night worried about me, worried sick. But I promise, you know, all the high school kids do this, mom, like, you know, you have nothing to worry about. So I guess it was like my senior year when I started a blackout when I drank, and I didn't really see anything wrong with it. I thought it was hilarious. I thought that it was cute and funny to like wake up and not remember anything, you know, or have like 6 hours that I don't remember that anything could have happened to me. You know, it's like the sick culture that is in young people today that, you know, in high school, it's like, how effed up can you get? And that was definitely the people that I hung out with, you know, how hard can you go? And, my senior year, I also lost, the first death that I ever experienced from a friend. He had overdosed on oxys, and that was a big deal for our community. I mean, he was like a, D1 football player. Like, he graduated high school and went off to like a D1 school to play football. And that was a really big deal for us. It was like, wow, like this stuff doesn't like discriminate, you know, it can happen to anybody. And, I just remember like just being so upset. And at that point, I didn't really touch anything harder than like pot and alcohol. But, then I was like, oh, I will never do that. Like, I'll learn from his mistakes. And I wouldn't be standing here today if I didn't learn from his mistakes. But so, you know, that goes on, and that the dust kind of settles from that. But it really shook everybody up. I graduated high school with really good grades. I don't know how. And I got accepted into Bloomsburg University. And I chose Bloomsburg because of block party. Like, I'm going to be honest, it was because of block party. It was because I knew it had a reputation of, like, being this crazy party school. It was, you know, about 2 hours away from home, just far enough where I could move there, but then still close enough that I could come home on the weekends if I needed to. So I go to Bloomsburg, and that's, like, that was really when I felt like that I have arrived. Right away, found the people that drank like me, found the people that did what I wanted to do. Didn't really care about class. I don't know how I didn't fail out the first semester, second semester, and so on. The first semester of my freshman year, I lived in the dorms, and I remember I lost like 6 or 7 cell phones, and my mom like had it with me. And, she got me like a landline to plug in to my dorm room. it was so embarrassing. And that was like when Facebook Messenger like first came out, so I would be like on my laptop like, all right, you know, I'm going out, but I'll be home at 8, so call me on my landline. And people were just like, what? I lost these cell phones, I lost debit cards, I lost my school ID so many times, and like I never like made the connection that like maybe getting completely shit faced had anything to do with it. So you know, I don't want to tell a bunch of war stories, but my freshman year, this one time I left a party by myself, and I don't remember leaving, but I do remember like slipping and falling on ice. It was in the winter time. It was like right before we were going to go home for like winter break. And, I remember like looking up and seeing all these red and blue lights, like cop lights. So I'm like I must have thought like, oh my gosh, this party's getting busted. Like, I have to get out of here. So I start walking, and I don't remember anything else. And then I woke up in my dorm room, in my bed. And my face just like, it hurt to breathe. And I'm like, what happens? Like something happens to me. I like finally get out of bed. I go look in the mirror and my eye, like I can't even open it. It's all cut up. My face is like bloody. My roommate wasn't there to like ask what happens. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm trying to piece it together. And I look in my purse and there's a note on like the back of a receipt and it says, if you want to know what happened to your face, call this number. And I'm like, oh my God. So I called the number and this person proceeds to tell me that I was wandering around like this apartment complex and he came out and he asked what I was doing and I couldn't even speak. It was just like all jumbled and, you know, not so incoherent. And so he says like, you're like, you need help. Like your face is like bleeding. So he brings me into his house. He said, my roommate's a nurse. He's in the nursing program here. So I guess this guy's like fixing me up. And then I guess I start to like come out of my blackout a little bit and realize like I'm in this strange house with like two guys that I don't know. And I start flipping out. And he just, you know, drives me back to my dorm room or whatever, and then I woke up. So I wind up going to the hospital, you know, to get my face checked out, and then the doctor was like, what do you want me to prescribe you for the pain, another bottle of Jack Daniels? And, you know, thinking it was, like, really funny, and I was just like, oh, my God, like, I'm never drinking again. And, like, I remember waking up so many weekends, so many days, just like, I'm never drinking again. I feel like crap. And what happened last night? And it was almost to the point where I, like, didn't want to even go through my phone and see pictures or text messages that I sent or anything. It was just that, like, immoral, or the incomprehensible demoralization that I would feel when I would wake up in the morning. And it only got so much worse after college. But, you know, my mom had asked me once, like, you know, do you think you're an alcoholic? And I said, no, like I don't like drink out of a paper bag. I don't drink a 40 out of a paper bag and I don't live under a bridge. Like, no, mom, I'm not an alcoholic. And, knowing that my dad is a recovering alcoholic, he didn't live under a bridge or he might've drank 40s out of paper bags, but I don't know. But like, I knew, like I had such a stigma about it and I don't know why, I guess, you know, part of my denial, but, so college was a complete blur. I don't know how I graduated in in 4 years, but I did. So I moved home and, the guy from high school, you know, every time I came home, we were back together and, you know, this is kind of when the relationship turned really toxic for me. You know, there was abuse there. You know, I couldn't wear jean shorts or I was called names. I couldn't wear like too tight of pants or, anytime I like talked to somebody else, the jealousy was just so real. And it was bad and I should have just ended it then, but we were both two really sick people. So I graduate college and I'm home and my parents tell me that they are going to move to Florida. And my dad hasn't wanted to move since I was like in eighth grade. And I was like, please no, don't do that to me. But so after I graduated college, they're like, okay, like we're going now. You know, and obviously the invite was there, but they were going to retire and I was 23. I'm like, no, I don't want to move down to Florida with you guys. You know, I was with this guy, we were going to move in together. We were going to get married and have kids and, you know, live happily ever after. So I stayed in Pennsylvania and, yeah. And that's just where like things just went to a whole nother level for me. I was dabbling, more than dabbling in other substances. And, I lived a couple blocks from a bar, in Souderton. I don't know if anyone is familiar with the IV. We used to call it the HIV. And, cause it was just disgusting. You could smoke in there. I mean, people were like selling coke out of the bathroom. It was just gross. So we would go there, you know, we would go there for like happy hour and then I'm waking up, in my bed the next day and I'm like, oh my God, again, like it happened again. And he would wake me up like, you don't remember what you did last night. And like, that was it was like Groundhog's Day for me. Like every single time I drank, I blacked out. I never knew what was going to happen. Never knew what I did. You know, I was always greeted in the morning by, like, hostility. And do you remember what you did last night? And, like, it was, like, a look of disgust. So I knew it just couldn't, it couldn't have been good. So, yeah, that's how we lived. Couldn't afford oil for our oil tanks, so we would, like, go buy diesel and, like, take a 5-minute hot shower, and that was, like, it. Wasn't taking care of myself. Couldn't, you know, for, like, the last couple months, I just remember, like, I couldn't even, like, look in the mirror at myself. Things had just gotten really bad. We were both just ghosts of ourselves and shells. And, you know, I couldn't even, I didn't want to be touched. I just wanted to, like, go home from work and lay in bed and do what I needed to do to feel okay and not sick. And it was just really scary. And nobody really knew, like, the extent of what we were doing. Nobody knew how bad it was besides us. So we even had a roommate and he, like, had no clue. The day before my sober date, you know, I woke up and I had, like, no intention of getting sober. But, you know, things happened where God kind of intervened in my life. And looking back, it definitely was God that intervened. But, you know, the guy I was with decided that he wanted to go to rehab, and we were kind of out of money, out of options, and I guess that was his solution to his problem. So he decides to, you know, basically call his parents, tell them everything, tell them what we were doing, tell him, like, what needed to happen. He wanted to go to rehab. So I stayed at home, and I remember, you know, we were together for a long time, so our parents were close friends. And, I remember, like, I have to get to my mom before his mom gets to her. So I had to call my mom and I had to tell her, you know, what was really going on. And it was like, thank God it wasn't face to face, or else I don't know what I would have done. But, it was like the hardest thing to have to tell my mom. You know, all the, well, some of the, like, gory details of what was going on. And I never want to do that again, ever. So he goes to rehab, and, you know, I'm telling my parents, and my dad gets on the phone, and he's like, I let's go to a meeting. Like, you know, I know where there's a solution. And, so, that night I went to my first meeting, after I, you know, drank the last of my alcohol. I went to this meeting and it was my first home group, and it was my home group up until, you know, a couple months ago. But, I walked in and I didn't really know if I wanted to be there. I didn't know what to expect. Like, I've been to hundreds of, you know, anniversary meetings and, you know, meetings with my dad and whatever, but never for myself. And, so I, like, looked at all those steps on the wall and I'm like, oh my God, like, wait, people, like, you do stuff in here. Like, you don't just not drink. And, so I was, you know, kind of getting the gist of what AA was. And I was like, yeah, reading them, definitely not doing four, amends. Like, I have to say sorry to people. Like, no, people, like, did me wrong. You know what I mean? So I had absolutely no self-awareness or anything. When it came to this, but so he's off in rehab. I'm trying to, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll come to these meetings for a little bit to get everybody off my back, maybe let the dust settle, and then, you know, or maybe, like, lay off the drugs and go back to drinking eventually. So 3 weeks, after that, I'm still going to meetings and stuff, not as often or anything, but, like, I'm not drinking or using or anything. So, I met a woman who I had asked to be my sponsor, and it was really cool how it happened, because the next day I got fired from my job. And as I'm packing my, you know, stuff in a box, I'm like, don't these people know that I'm 3 weeks sober? Like, hello, like, I'm a good person, you know, after I was on, like, this, you know, probation for 60 days already, because I was just a shitty employee. But you know, like I'm better now. I'm 3 weeks into this and like I'm better. And, they couldn't see that. So I put all my stuff in my car and ready to like call up somebody to go get wasted. And for some reason, I dial my new sponsor's number. And I call her and I'm like, I know we just met, but like, this is what happened and I don't know what to do. And, you know, and I'm ready to go to the bar. I'm ready to call this person. And she was like, okay, go ahead. And I'm like, what? I'm like, you're my sponsor. Like, aren't you supposed to like tell me not to drink, not to like go get high? And she's like, well, no, like, obviously you haven't been through like enough pain. Like, you know, maybe you should go do that. Go try it. See how it works. She's like, that car you're driving, you'll lose that. That doll you love so much, you'll lose that. That apartment you live in, you'll lose that. And it was really like the first time I ever like thought about anything besides the now, the here and now. And, you know, I know they say like live in the moment, but that's all I lived for. Like I needed what I needed and I needed it now. And that's it. Didn't care about, you know, playing that tape to like, okay, well then what's going to happen in 4 hours when, you know, I am out of alcohol or, you know, like, that was my first lesson in like really just like playing that tape. So I didn't drink or use that day and I went home and cried and then filed for unemployment and I guess probably went to a meeting or something. And, you know, like my idea of like a Friday night wasn't spending it with you people and like going to a diner afterwards. Like, you know, that's what my dad did. And like, I watched him do that my whole life. And I'm like, that's not, I don't want to do that, you know? I thought being sober, like, I wouldn't have any fun. You know, what was I gonna do at Eagles games? Like, I couldn't, like, get, like, wasted at Eagles games. Like, what was I gonna do for my wedding? What was I gonna do, at concerts and festivals and, you know, all this stuff that I'm, like, thinking, like, oh my God, well then, like, life's just not worth living if I can't, you know, I just really equated alcohol to having fun, even though like it just wasn't fun anymore. Like, I don't know where that line was where like the party stopped and it was just like, I'm doing this to like survive and like feel okay or like feel like normal or like I can actually get up and go to work or whatever. So I keep going. I sign up for unemployment. I hit like 2 or 3 meetings a day. He winds up getting out of rehab and, can't even get like 30 days together. He's back at it. So then I'm that, person standing outside the bathroom door, like waiting for him to overdose in there. And it was just, it was insanity. And, but I still wasn't, you know, but I was still sober. And, I guess, I mean, I don't know how I stayed sober through that. But I did. And, so I move out, I break up with him and I move out and God, that's something that God gave me the courage to do that. Like when, you know, they say like God does for me what I couldn't do for myself. Like I didn't want to like break up with him and have to move out and start my life over and, you know, all that stuff. But like, it was just one day I woke up, I was like, I did not get sober to watch you kill yourself and I'm leaving and that's it. And I moved in with a friend. He wound up going to treatment in Florida, so I got to keep the dog, and, which is, like, the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, but, that dog, man. So I move in with a friend, and, I start, like, working these steps. I got, like, this other job in the meantime. It wasn't, like, what I really wanted to do, but it was something. So I'm working the steps. One was hard for me because, like I said, I don't have any DUIs or no children that I, you know, were taken away from me or anything like that. So it was really hard for me to like actually admit like I had a problem with alcohol. But, you know, hearing people share about how they felt like that next morning or being such a shell of a person, like I hate myself, blah, blah, blah. That's what I could relate to. It was like such an emotional bottom that I had hit. Yeah, keep going with the steps. 2 and 3 for me, were a little difficult also because we were priesters growing up. You know, we went to church on, Christmas and Easter and like weddings and funerals and that was it. We didn't, you know, my dad, even though he was in AA, he didn't really like talk about God that much or whatever. So, so it was kind of hard for me. And, you know, the whole like, oh, you know, God turned his back on me and like all that stuff. And yeah, I mean, you know, I don't believe, I believe God gives us free will. And I didn't make very good choices with that free will, but, you know, he never turned his back on me. And, so I formed this like great relationship with my higher power, who I call God. And, you know, I'm like finally feeling okay. Like finally feeling like maybe I do belong here and, you know, I'm happier and I actually have money. Like when the next paycheck comes, like I actually have like money left over, which is crazy. And, life's just like getting better. And, we got like that call that, you know, we had, my family was kind of not waiting for, but kind of preparing ourselves for. And my brother was found dead in his recovery house. And that was like, that was just like one of the worst things that had like ever, ever happened to me. You know, I was really, really angry at God, really angry. Like we just, God, I thought we were friends. Like, how could you do this to me? How could you take him from me? And, like for the first time in my life, I realized that something wasn't about me. It like wasn't about Sam. And I was able to like be a daughter to my parents as they're like planning their son's funeral. And, I was able to like be there for his girlfriend that, you know, he had left behind. And, I was able to like think of someone else besides myself. And, you know, overdose is like, if you're sitting here and you haven't, if your life hasn't been affected by that, you are so lucky. And it's just getting even worse today. But, you know, I definitely realized that God might have known that he wasn't going to overcome his addiction. And, you know, he took him home. And I would always rather miss him than watch him suffer. And that's, like, the truth. And that's something that I realized after, like, months of work with my sponsor and, you know, just talking to other people. I mean, that night when I found out, I went to a meeting. I didn't even think about drinking or using or anything. And like that, that's also God and working in my life. Like I didn't think about doing any of that. And I put my hand up and I shared about it. I mean, I cried on that table and I just put it all out there and people were like, just keep talking about it, you know, talk about it till you can't talk anymore and then talk some more about it. And so that's what I did. And, you know, taking suggestions was, like, pretty much all I could do at that point. I was, like, really on autopilot, but that really rocked my world. So I did my fourth and fifth step. You know, I think that kind of halted my step work a little bit. But my fourth and fifth step, everyone thinks is, like, so scary. And, you know, it is to a degree. Nobody wants to look at themselves like that. But, you know, it's so necessary. And I definitely came out of that as like a changed person for sure. I had 44 character defects and my sponsor was like, yeah, now you have to go and ask people for 44 of your character assets because that's not the point of this. You know, it's not, you're not supposed to just like completely cut yourself down. But it really saw where my behavior lies like in my everyday life. And like, you know, I still have character defects that are very apparent in my life today. Step 6 and 7, I got to do down, at the beach, which was really cool. So I would write, like, you know, the character defects I was ready for God to remove in the sand, and I would, you know, the water would, like, come wash them away. It was a really cool experience. 8 and 9, I, like, had my list for 8, like, 2 days after I got sober. Like, I was ready. There was amends where I was like, you know what, I can't wait to, like, apologize to some of these people. Other amends, I could probably be convinced, but then there was like one or two that was just like, nope, like you can't convince me. I will not, like, I never want to contact that person. So I started on my, tour D apology and, like the first one was my parents and I mean, I just realizing how much I've taken from them, you know, money, sleep, peace of mind, like so much that just, it just made me feel like such a horrible human being. But, you know, most of these amends that I made were living, are living amends too. You know, my parents just Sam, like, the moment you walked into AA, like, you know, you're doing great and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And some of them I was really scared to make because I was afraid of things getting rehashed. And my sponsor was like, that is so not the point of it. Please, like, keep control of the conversation. And if anyone here is, like, on step nine, afraid to make these amends, like, I promise you it's going to go better than you think. And I mean, that's what was told to me, and they all did. They all went way better. People were like, wow, I can really see a change in you. And, you know, some people were just shocked that I, like, called to, like, engage with them. But it was really, you know, that was just another more experiences that really helped shape, you know, where my recovery comes in. And 10, I try to do every day. I have an app on my phone that, you know, I have a friend that, you know, we send our inventories back and forth. But really makes me look at myself and try to think about it before I do or say something throughout the day. Like, oh, that's going to end up on my inventory list later. Like, you know, do I really want to do that? So it's really helping to make me, like, super self-aware. 11 is also, is kind of hard for me. Meditation is really hard. Takes a lot of practice. I'm not the best with it, but I do try to pray every day. You know, I wish I could be one of those people who, like, you know, get out of bed and hit their knees right away. I like, forget, and I'm just being totally honest. Like, that's not what I'm thinking about first thing in the morning. But on my way to work or when I'm, you know, drinking coffee or whatever, that's when I have my, like, time with God. And then 12, you know, just being in service is so great. Having the privilege to, like, sponsor other women or, like, being asked to, like, for me to, like, take them through the steps is, like, it's so flattering and such an honor, like, seeing the light go off in, like, other women's eyes of, like, oh, my God, like, they're getting it. And, you know, I have a couple that have stayed sober, you know, to this day, and I have a couple that have gone out, and I stayed sober throughout them all. So, you know, that's my 12-step work. The first time I had a sponsee relapse on me was, like, hit my ego super hard. Like, wow, like, am I not good enough? Am I not, like, a good enough sponsor? Like, did I not say the right thing? And like, I'm not here to keep anybody sober. I'm just here to show someone how I got sober and how I stay sober. So that was a big lesson for me too. Other service work, I've been a GSR at my home group. I was a GSR for 2 years. I got to go to one of the conventions. I think it was in, I don't remember where, but it was a voting year, and that was really cool to see, like, how AA works at, like, an area level. So if anybody has an opportunity to do that, I would recommend it. I was a treasurer for my home group. Right now, I am a host for a Penn Foundation rehab nearby for a Wednesday night meeting there. So I get speakers. You know, I've gotten speakers all throughout the year. It helps when other, you know, home groups sign up or whatever. But yeah, I make sure someone's there every Wednesday to deliver a meeting to the people, you know, the patients at Penn Foundation. You know, today I'm in a healthy relationship with someone who loves me, who I love them. And, you know, I didn't think it was possible to, like, be with someone you don't fight with every day. But it is. And it's amazing. And, you know, just because I don't drink or use doesn't mean that, you know, drugs and alcohol don't affect me. You know, I have friends and loved ones who have relapsed and who are still out there right now, and it's really, really hard having to decide, like, whether they deserve, like, soft love or tough love, and it's something that I still struggle with, is having to decide, like, when I should stay and when I should leave. And so I know there are a couple announcements after my story. So I just wanted to end with this. I this isn't my own words, I took this from someone, but Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't promise to open up the gates of heaven and let you in, but it does promise to open up the gates of hell and let you out. So thank you for having me.